You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the official flagship of the team. I would ask you all how it's going today, but I think I already know the answer. If you're a Rockets fan, odds are you're still reeling from last night's unfortunate news that James Harden has not a grade 1 hamstring strain, but a grade 2. That means he is at least out for 2 weeks, and basically 2 weeks of nothing but rest and PRP therapy. He'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks, which realistically means that probably 3 weeks is about the absolute soonest that he could return, even if everything goes well. And more commonly, according to a lot of medical experts, for a grade 2 hamstring strain in the NBA, a sport which requires so much athleticism, so much starting and stopping, you're probably looking at 4 to 6 weeks. So you're looking at, by far, in 6 years, the longest absence that James Harden has ever had in Houston, the longest time that the Rockets have been without their franchise player since he arrived in October 2012. And even though they're 26-9, even though there's Chris Paul in place to potentially step up into a larger role, even with all the positive things that have been accomplished to this point in the season, certainly there's a cloud going forward until the Rockets answer the bell. And hopefully they do. That starts Wednesday night in Orlando. It's the start of a back-to-back Orlando Wednesday, then home against the Warriors on Thursday. I'm going to be joined in just a few minutes by Preston Ellis. He is an Orlando-based writer and podcaster for their SB Nation affiliate to talk about the Rockets Magic matchup, also to get some perspective from him on how the Rockets look. As you guys know, I like to do from other writers and podcasters around the association. But until we talk about any particular matchup, I know y'all probably want to talk big picture. What does this mean? Because at least 3 weeks, in my opinion, without James Harden could be 4 to 6. It's a long time. And first off, I'm a little surprised. If you listened to yesterday's show, you heard my initial guess was a grade 1 strain. That's because of how James was acting after the game yesterday. To see him, albeit gingerly, still walking around, still appearing in a very positive state of mind, that did not suggest a grade 2 or grade 3, something particularly serious. However, I think the one thing that I underestimate, and perhaps all of us underestimate, and we probably shouldn't by now, is just how tough James Harden is. And even if it is a serious injury, at the same time, he's able to push through it as best he can. And that's the way he's done with most injuries until this one, which he literally can't do. So as far as what it means for the short term, I wrote a column at Sports Talk 790's website, sports790.com. That's the official flagship radio station of the team, and that's where I work. And I called it 5 Storylines to Watch in the Absence of James Harden. I've got it pinned to my Twitter page, at Ben Dubose. You can see some of these, but as far as I look at it, how are the Rockets going to do this over the next, at least, I would say, 7 or 8 games, and potentially as many as 15 games, in my opinion? It starts with Chris Paul. Because what you're going to see right now is Chris Paul going from the number 2 option, which he's been largely playing with James Harden, and the occasional number 1 in the minutes that James Harden is out. That's early in the second, early in the fourth quarter, largely against opposing bench units from the opposing teams. You're going to see Chris Paul go from that to being the number 1 option at all times. And the good news is that Paul has, even though he's 32 years old, there has been no signs of slippage from Chris Paul at all. He still, by every metric I can find, looks like a top 10 player in the NBA. And folks, there are worse things than having Chris Paul available to slide into your number 1 option in place of James Harden. He should be able to do fairly well. Also, the schedule, that's a benefit for the Rockets, especially if it's a shorter-term injury. The schedule does get tougher around the 18th of the month. You then play Minnesota, then Golden State. But over the next couple of weeks, which is all we know 100% that James is out, you do have the Warriors on Thursday, but aside from that, you've got Orlando, Detroit, Chicago, Portland, Phoenix, and the Clippers. None of these teams are particularly good, and a lot of them are quite frankly bad. So if you have a team with the veterans, the talent of guys like Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, Clint Capella, let's even throw Gerald Green in that mix, and hopefully Ryan Anderson and PJ Tucker are due to return to form. There's a lot of culture, there's a lot of talented players, there's a lot of maturity, and so at least over the short term, with Chris Paul able to slide into that number 1 playmaker role, there's a case for how you can, at least for a couple of weeks, mitigate this in combination with the schedule. What's going to be interesting to watch, in my opinion, is whether Chris Paul stays as efficient as he's been to this point in the year, now that you're going to put him in the undisputed number one option role. Because to this point, as I said earlier, Paul's numbers, they're great. The efficiency, his player efficiency rating is 25 from the field, 46%, 40% from three, 17-9, and just over 31 minutes per game. All that stuff is great, but as I said, he's not exactly doing it as the focal point for opposing defenses. What limited time he is the focal point is coming against largely the second teams. When he's going against starters, he's been the number two. Now we're going to see what happens when Chris Paul is your undisputed number one. The good news, well, he was number one with the LA Clippers last year, and he did just fine. It's not like you're asking him to go back in time several years. You're really just asking him to go back to the role he had a few months ago as the 2016-2017 season was drawing to a close. And even in that playoff series against Utah, when the Clippers did not have Blake Griffin but still took the Jazz to seven games on the back of an insane run from Chris Paul. So it's going to be tougher for Chris, but it's going to be a good opportunity for him. You are going to need other folks like Eric Gordon, like Gerald Green, to step up. But Chris Paul being the point guard, the traditional guy, if it goes well, honestly, Chris is the type of guy who can, especially on a short-term basis, elevate the play of his teammates. But besides the short-term factors, I can actually see a small silver lining, and I think you guys will as well, over what happens over the next couple of weeks, which is you get to answer the question, how elite is Chris Paul? Because we know he's a free agent after the year. We know the plan is for the Rockets to keep him, and of course he wants to stay. He chose Houston. He's bought the massive mansion. He'll be eligible for the five-year, $200 million extension that essentially the collective bargaining agreement was changed with him in mind, because of course Chris Paul, longtime head of the Players Union. So there's a lot of expectation for Chris Paul. I think on his end, certainly he'd love to get the five-year, $200 million deal. And for the Rockets, you know, if you're able to get LeBron James or some other awesome scenario, then maybe you get him to take less. But I think you're probably looking at him being a max option. That's why Daryl Morey has already admitted to talking with Tillman Fertitta, new owner, admitting that there's no way around it. The Rockets, to keep this team together, are going to be a tax team. But at the same time, Chris Paul turns 33 years old in May. He has missed 17 games this year due to injury, even if some of them were the Rockets being overly cautious. So I think this will be a good opportunity to see just how elite Chris Paul is. When he doesn't have the benefit of playing next to James Harden, can he be the number one? Can he take that higher usage and not break down, stay as efficient as he's been? Personally, I think he can. All the advanced numbers that I'm looking at show that Chris Paul is still Chris Paul, still a top 10 player. Some metrics even have him as a top 5 player, and I think he and the Rockets are going to be just fine. But big picture, I do think you're going to get somewhat of an answer as to just how elite he still is. And long term, that might even be a positive, because it could give you a little bit greater confidence as far as the potential deal, whether the Rockets give him that 5 years, $200 million when he's due for a new deal in July. I think this stretch actually might reduce some of the concerns that I think some folks on Rockets Twitter have about Chris Paul and his future in Houston. Short-term, though, certainly, as I said, Chris, there's going to be some questions as to whether he's as efficient. All the stuff about his contract, that's long-term. I know for most of us, we're in the middle of a season. You just want to get through the day-to-day grind. And question one will be on his efficiency. And then question two will be, what does it mean for the rest of the guys around him? Can he get them going to the same extent that James Harden usually would as a facilitator? And in terms of, you know, the players around, I think your front court rotation is going to be largely the same, knock on wood, hoping that Clint Capela is still healthy. What's going to be interesting is the back court, because certainly you're going to have Eric Gordon. He's going to replace Harden in the starting lineup the same way he replaced Chris Paul in the lineup for the 15 games that Chris missed earlier in the year with his knee injury. And I think you're also going to see even more minutes for Gerald Green, newcomer. And the good news is that they're actually heading into this on a bit of a hot streak. We all know Gordon had that kind of month of subpar production, I believe, from like November the 12th through December 9th. 10 games, he shot like 33% from the field and 20% from three. Well, folks, in the 11 games since then, Gordon is averaging 21 points in 34 minutes per game, and he's doing it on 48% from the field and 42% from behind the arc. Meanwhile, you've got Gerald Green, who you signed a week ago. The last two games, he's averaging 14 points in 24.5 minutes, and that's coming on 58.8% shooting from the field and 60% shooting from three. That's one big difference. Earlier in the season, we saw what happened when Chris Paul was not available. The Rockets could not find a third backcourt option that they really trusted. They tried Isaiah Cannon for a couple of days when they signed him. They tried Bobby Brown. They tried Demetrius Jackson. But it was just mainly James Harden, Eric Gordon being extended, occasionally even overextended, because Mike D'Antoni could not find a third guard that he trusted. He tried a few things here and there, but it didn't work. Even though it's a small sample, it's just in basically day three of the Gerald Green tenure. But it seems pretty obvious that Mike D'Antoni has more trust in Gerald Green than he did in any of those guys. For that matter, Gerald Green is playing better than any of those guys. So I think at least in the short term, he's in good rhythm. So is Eric Gordon. And so I think those are the guys who are going to see their minutes rise. And while they're certainly not going to replace James Harden, the leading scorer in the NBA of over 32 points per game, it at least gives you a puncher's chance, especially against teams like Orlando, Detroit, Chicago. These are not exactly the heavyweights of the NBA. What happens against the Warriors Thursday, we'll have to wait and see. But over the short term, especially if those two keep shooting well, it's a pretty good sign. Now, in theory, this was week three since Luke Bamute's injury, but we heard from Mike D'Antoni at practice today. Looks like it'll still be another couple of weeks, although they're still guessing on when Luke is going to be back. Early in the season, they occasionally played Luke some guard minutes in the absence of Chris Paul. It's not going to happen this time because Luke isn't ready to play. And as far as those asking about his availability, I'm not worried about it because with Luke, folks, this is a serious injury. It's not like that this is just sort of some turned ankle that they're not telling us about. No, when you dislocate a shoulder, it easily could have been a season ender for Luke. So I don't necessarily think that there's something they're hiding from us. I just think when you're looking at an injury of that severity, it's, again, not like a turned ankle where you're just stunned if in a week or two that it's not ready to go. This is a very, very tricky injury. Could have been a lot worse. Fortunately, it wasn't. However, when you're dealing with an injury of that severity, you're certainly not going to rush him back. And the good news is that because Gerald Green is stepping up, assuming that continues, that buys you more time with Luke Bamute, in addition to, of course, helping fill some of the 36 minutes per game that James Harden has been putting up. Last thing, besides the X's and O's of the short term, how you're going to fill the James Harden minutes, again, 36 minutes a game, 32 points, 9 assists, it's rather huge shoes to fill. Folks, in my opinion, it's time to start focusing on the Spurs and the Timberwolves. I don't want to concede altogether, but right now it's pretty difficult to see a path to actually catch the Warriors over 82 games. It's difficult to swallow because I know we've talked a lot here at Lockdown Rockets about the quest for the number one seed. I think the Rockets would have loved it, and that's your best chance to take down the Warriors this season, in my opinion. However, it was always unlikely because what makes the Warriors so special, especially over 82, they have so many all-star talents that they are more insulated from injuries than teams like the Rockets are. Last year, they lost Kevin Durant for over a month. This year, they've lost Stephen Curry for at least 10 games. These injuries do happen to them as well. It's not like it just happens to the Rockets, but the Warriors are able to survive those in a way that a team like the Rockets can't because you just don't have that same depth of all-star talent. Now, maybe the Rockets get really lucky. Maybe Harden's on the very short end of the timetable. We know in the past he's been a quick healer, and so maybe combine his quick healing tendencies, if he's able to get back within 3 weeks, and the Rockets, led by Chris Paul, can somehow go 5-2 or even 6-1 through this soft patch of the schedule, then maybe the number one seed isn't off the table. But a likely scenario, in my opinion, is that it is. I think, especially with you have two games against the Warriors, where if you can't win those head-to-head battles, and the Warriors are certainly the more talented team when the Rockets don't have James Harden, then in addition to losing games in the standings, you're going to lose games in the standings directly to the Warriors because you're playing them. So I would love to be wrong, but I think from a practical standpoint, any chance at catching the Warriors over 82 games depended on James Harden being healthy. With him not healthy, I think the focus turns more towards the San Antonio Spurs and the Minnesota Timberwolves and making sure you do what you did not do a year ago, which is get a top two seed in the Western Conference, have home court advantage in the second round, and be in position to at least get to the Western Conference Finals to get you that best of seven series with the Warriors over a smaller sample size. And then from there, the hope is that even if you don't have home court, such a small sample, if your shooters get hot, you'll roll the dice and see what happens over seven games. And right now, the Rockets are in a good position compared to the Spurs and Timberwolves. Even after losing five of their past six games, the Rockets are still up by three games in the loss column. That's what matters, because when you win a lot more games than you lose, you've got to focus on the loss column. The Rockets are up by three games over the Spurs in the loss column and five games on the Timberwolves. The Rockets also have the tiebreaker at the moment over the Spurs, so they're in pretty good shape. Also, the advanced metrics, the Rockets' point differential is plus 8.4. The Spurs are plus 3.1. The Timberwolves are plus 2.7. I know the Spurs numbers might be a little deflated by not having Kawhi Leonard the entire year. But folks, Kawhi Leonard is still not all the way back. He's still not playing back-to-backs, still not exceeding 30 minutes. So I think everything on paper indicates that the Rockets are a better team than the Spurs and the Timberwolves. And I think even without James Harden, with his schedule easing up and your other pieces like Chris Paul and Clint Capella coming back, you can start rebuilding that buffer that you lost a little bit of. Not all of it. Still a 3-game lead and a 5-game lead. It's not is not unhealthy at all. But you can start to rebuild that buffer to where it was before the losing streak, even in the absence of James Harden. But I do think it's important to do that for the Rockets. They need to mentally turn the page, because whether they admit it or not, I think deep down they know this Harden injury, it probably cost them their best shot at chasing down the Warriors for the one seed. It is what it is. However, there's a lot more to play for than that, because certainly you want to get further than you did a year ago. You want to get your shot in a smaller sample, a best of seven against Golden State. And the best way to do that is to be mature, unfortunately, led by Chris Paul and Trevor Ariza. I think the Rockets right now are certainly that. And you want to be able to turn the page quickly and realize that, hey, even if this cost us our best shot at getting Golden State, there's still plenty to play for by going out and grinding and get every win they possibly can. I expect the Rockets to do that. I think it's going to be fine. But it is going to be some challenge, at least, beginning tomorrow night in Orlando, to get them to mentally turn the page. And it'll be a test of their leadership. But the good news, as far as leadership goes, Chris Paul and Trevor Ariza are about as good as it gets. So I think ultimately the Rockets are going to be fine. Mike D'Antoni, reigning coach of the year, I think he'll be able to rally the troops around that as well. One final point before we get to the Magic preview and Preston Ellis, I want to talk about that last name I mentioned, which is Mike D'Antoni. One thing that I think is very unfair, a narrative in the aftermath of the James Harden injury that I've seen on Rockets Twitter, is this idea that Harden was or will be overused, and that that's responsible for his injury, or that the injury might not go away by the playoffs because the Rockets overextend him. First off, I don't think he was overused. Harden's been averaging 36.3 minutes per game. That is the lowest of any of his six seasons in Houston. For all the talk about him playing 40 minutes in Sunday's game when he got injured, folks, he played 40 or more minutes in only 5 of his 35 games this season. The Rockets are monitoring his minutes closer than they ever have before. They get it. The fact is, when you're playing NBA basketball, when you're playing hoops at the highest level, the athleticism required, the starting, the stopping, these things happen. And it's not just to the Rockets. If anything, the Rockets have been lucky with Harden not having any serious injury in his 6-plus years in Houston until now. It can happen to anyone, and it does happen to anyone, even if you control the minutes. For example, look at the Warriors. That's your biggest competition. Kevin Durant missed over a month with a knee injury last year, and he was only averaging 33 minutes per game. Stephen Curry this year is only averaging 32 minutes per game, and he's already missed 11 games with the ankle injury, as we discussed. It's really that simple. Durant took a false step, and I believe it was an MCL issue in his knee. Stephen Curry, he stepped on someone's foot, and he turned an ankle, and James Harden, it just exactly how he left, he put a little bit of extra force on his hamstring, and it went out. These things happen. And then Kawhi Leonard, everyone gives the Spurs all these props, and they largely deserve it for how they manage minutes. Well, folks, Greg Popovich has managed Kawhi so tightly, he has never averaged more than 33 minutes per game in a season in his entire NBA career. And yet he still missed the first 27 games of this year with an ongoing quadriceps injury. And even now, as I said, he's still not fully cleared to play, not participating in the back-to-backs, seems to be capped at about the 25 to 28 minute per game range. So the fact is, these injuries happen to everyone. I know it sucks, but the fact is the Rockets have actually been pretty lucky over the course of Harden's first 5 seasons in Houston. I think they were sort of due for it, so was James. And the silver lining of it, at least it happened in December/January, as opposed to closer to the postseason. The flip side of that, I also don't see anything that suggests that the Rockets are going to rush his return and jeopardize his long-term health or the chance of him bringing his A game in the postseason in that hypothetical series against the Warriors that we were just talking about. I know in the past, James has returned quickly, but the vast majority of his injuries that he's played through have been bumps and bruises. We've seen the bruised knee, we've seen the bruised foot. In all of those, there has been one common thread. The doctors suggest that he cannot make it worse by playing on it. It's just a matter of pain tolerance. This is different. It does not take a genius to understand that a grade 2 hamstring pull, it can be made worse. It can be re-aggravated. We see it all the time. So I don't believe that the Rockets are going to force him back based on what we've seen him play through in regards to someone giving him a knee to the side or the back of his knee. This is different. And for the Rockets, they've invested over $200 million in him over the next 6 seasons. They get it. They're not going to risk having him at his peak performance in the playoffs. They're not going to risk his long-term health for the sake of taking one or two extra games in a regular season. We won't know that for sure until we see exactly when he returns, but I don't believe in just saying the sky is falling for no reason. To this point, the injuries that Harden has played through, they're apples and oranges compared to a grade 2 hamstring pull. This is real. This is a partial tear. It means some of those muscle fibers have been seriously impacted, and it's different than just a bruise on his knee or his foot. This is something significant, and I don't really see any way that the Rockets rush him back. And quite frankly, I don't think they even can, because they're shutting him down for 2 weeks. Well, the key thing to remember was shutting him down for 2 weeks. That's a full shutdown. That's not saying that he can return in 2 weeks, because the next 2 weeks, all he's going to be doing is resting and getting PRP therapy. He is not going to be moving that leg in any sort of strenuous motion at all. So even if in 2 weeks they are pleased with how it's healing, in my opinion, it would still take a week at a bare minimum, and possibly longer than that, to kind of slowly ramp up his activity, to get his conditioning back, and to test it to make sure that there's not going to be any sort of long-term consequences. I fully expect the Rockets to be cautious with this, and I don't see anything in their history that should make you overly paranoid about the Rockets rushing James back. If anything, folks, I think you can actually take a positive from it, from the standpoint of that taking all these weeks off, as I said, at least 3, and could be as many as 6, who knows, it wouldn't shock me if it went all the way to All-Star break, and so you could, you know, tie in an extra week there as well. Well, folks, this gives him several weeks off that he did not have a year ago. We all know what happened a year ago when, after playing 81 regular season games, the fatigue wall that seemed to hit against the San Antonio Spurs in the playoffs. This actually gives him some time off, and that's in addition, of course, to having Chris Paul to help shoulder the load. So if anything, it could be a blessing in disguise for down the line that you have a fresher James Harden in April and May of this year than you did of last year. Now, I know that's speculative. I know that's down the road. For now, what I want to hit home is just the overall theme that no, I don't think that Harden was overused. I don't think that's what caused this. And I also don't see any reason to expect the other shoe to drop and think that they'll rush him back in 3 weeks just to save one or two wins in the regular season. I think Harden gets it, and more importantly, I think the Rockets get it. I think they'd love to be pleasantly surprised. Reality is that with Harden's injury, your shot at catching the Warriors, the number one seed, not going to say it's gone, but your best shot is probably not there anymore. Realistically, I think your goal is to stay in that number two spot, to hold off the Spurs and the Timberwolves, who are 3 and 5 games back, respectively, in the loss column. You do have a buffer there, and you also do, you have the statistics, you know, in the back of your mind that you are a better team on paper than those two by a large amount when you look at some of the metrics. And so there's no reason for the Rockets to just all of a sudden panic over one or two games. I think they're going to have a long-term view with this, and I don't see any reason to expect otherwise. I know Harden has not always had that view in the past, but there is one common theme through those. If you look, you can find over and over again that the Rockets doctors say that by playing through it, he can't make it worse. It's just a matter of pain tolerance. This is not that injury. This is different. It sucks in the short term. It's definitely going to make the Rockets a less talented team on the floor as far as the implications. As I said leading off, you need Chris Paul to step into that number one role. You need Eric Gordon, Gerald Green to stay hot. You need Trevor Ariza to do his thing. You need Ryan Anderson and PJ Tucker, who have been shooting in the mid-30s in terms of percentage from the field for all of December, to get back to the guys they were in November when they were in the mid to upper 40s from the field. You need Clint Capella to stay healthy. Yeah, there's a lot of variables that you need. But in the grand scheme, there's no reason to panic, and there's no reason to be overly pessimistic, in my opinion, about how the Rockets are going to handle this. So with that said, that's sort of my big picture, 30,000-foot overview of the situation, what it means for the Rockets to not have James Harden for the next few weeks. Generally here at Locked On Rockets, we are a daily podcast, so we often take kind of the micro view instead of the macro, because of course we're your source every day. And this day is a bit of an exception because, of course, we got the news late last night and the Rockets practicing today. It's fresh on everyone's minds. Let's discuss it. I know yesterday I was guessing it was a grade 1, which would probably be 7 to 10 days. I was wrong on that. It's longer. Let's discuss it. But with that out of the way, I want to get back to what we do, our bread and butter here at Locked On Rockets, which is discuss the day-in, day-out version of the Houston Rockets that is on the basketball floor. And tomorrow, they're back in action Wednesday night in Orlando, the start of a back-to-back. So to do that, I am joined by Preston Ellis. He is an Orlando writer and podcaster with their SB Nation affiliate. We kind of taped this joint podcast just a few moments ago, breaking down the matchup, his view of the Rockets, my view of the Magic, produced both on his Orlando platforms and mine in Houston. So without further ado, here's that conversation that just wrapped up between myself and Preston Ellis about tomorrow's game. All right, Ben Dubose here of Locked On Rockets, on the phone now with Preston Ellis. Preston, what's going on today, buddy?
Hey, man. Happy New Year. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, glad to have you. And identify yourself, because we're doing a bit of a dual podcast here. So for Locked On Rockets listeners that aren't familiar with you, or I guess for your listeners that aren't familiar with me, of course, Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the Rockets. Explain your background with the Magic, the Do You Believe in Magic podcast, and some of the stuff you do for the SB Nation affiliate over there.
Yeah, this is really interesting because we're both doing this in the back half of our current podcast. Of course, you guys have just heard me recap the Brooklyn Nets and the Miami Heat with Aaron Goldstone and Will Ogburn. My name is Preston Ellis, of course, and I have just started. This is our third episode of Do You Believe in Magic? Many of you who have previously called me from the Bird Rights podcast, we have over 60,000 followers this season. We've done really well. I, being an Orlando resident, have decided to take up with the SB Nation affiliate in Orlando, the sister company to the SB Nation, thebirdrights.com. So this is something that we're kicking off. We're hoping it's going to do really well, follow suit of thebirdrights.com. We're also going to have our good friend Ben Dubose in a couple of weeks previewing for the Pelicans when we host them this January 26th. So thrilled to have him. Again, he contributes to Sports Talk 790, as he mentioned, and of course is affiliated with 790 AM in the greater Houston area. And as he mentioned, he is Ben Dubose at Ben Dubose on Twitter. Did I cover about all of it, Ben?
Yep, I think we're good. Let's talk basketball, buddy.
All right, let's get right to it. Before we go anywhere, let's start you off with James Harden, being that he is the NBA MVP candidate and one of the stars of the league. He suffered a grade 2 hamstring strain with less than a minute in the fourth period of the Rockets' victory over the Lakers the other night, in which he scored 40 points and 11 assists in a thrilling game that went to double overtime. Jonathan Fagan tweeted something to the point of, a grade 2 hamstring strain involves a partial tear of the hamstring. There could be a variety of severities, but 2 weeks is for an exam, not necessarily for Harden to return. Ben, give us a status update. Are Rockets fans concerned right now, and what is the latest on James Harden's timetable?
Yeah, I would say the absolute soonest is about 3 weeks. It's critical to understand that the two-week timetable given by the team was for a reevaluation, not for him to actually return to game action. And I've actually just been discussing a little bit of this on the lead to my show today. But basically, what this means for not just Rockets fans, but the NBA as a whole, it's going to be an extended period of time. I would say at least 7 or 8 games, potentially as many as 10 to 15, because that two-week timetable, he's going to be doing absolutely nothing, Preston, other than resting and then doing PRP therapy. So even in 2 weeks, even if it's healing really fast, even if he's at the fast end of the grade 2 timetable, which is entirely possible over the course of his career, he's been a fast healer, he's been extremely durable. Even so, there's going to be a slow period, I would say at least a week after that, to where you have to kind of slowly build him back up, let him ramp up his conditioning, let him test the leg to get some confidence back in it, make sure it's not going to go out in the game when he goes all out. So I would say realistically, about 3 weeks from now, which is probably, you know, 8 to 10 games, is the absolute soonest. And then if he's the far end of the timetable, it wouldn't shock me if it was 6, because you have to keep in mind, mid-February, we know the All-Star break is coming up, and the Rockets, if it drug out to the long end, it wouldn't shock me at all if they tried to kind of sneak another week in there, because if you rested all the way to the All-Star break, you would have an easy built-in week on the back end of that. So I would say the hope is probably 3 weeks, mid to late January, but you're not really going to know until about a week or two from now when you see exactly how that hamstring is feeling. And realistically, it could be as much as, it wouldn't shock me if it was 6 weeks. A grade 2 hamstring is a pretty big deal, and even though Harden's been very durable over the course of his career, he's been durable with injuries that have generally been bumps and bruises in nature, things that he can play through, and other than pain tolerance, you can't make it worse. I think we all know a hamstring strain, you absolutely can make it worse, you can re-aggravate it, and of course the Rockets, now James Harden and Chris Paul, they've got their eyes on challenging the Warriors in the playoffs, and I'm pretty confident they're going to take a big picture view on basically playing the long game and making sure that come April, May, he's as close to 100% as humanly possible.
And this couldn't come at a more difficult time for the Houston Rockets. Sorry to hijack this podcast from you, but I just want to get some information for our listeners. Of course, the Rockets famously went on that 14-game winning streak, which is probably the biggest win streak of the season. Maybe the Celtics approached something close to that. But most recently, with Chris Paul back in the lineup, they've lost 5 in a row before winning out this week on the Los Angeles Lakers. And most importantly, it's not the end of the world that the Rockets drop a couple of games here and there. but it is vital for them to experiment with this Chris Paul-James Harden relationship in Houston to get ready for the Golden State Warriors, the San Antonio Spurs, the Oklahoma City Thunders of the world once they get into the conference, Western Conference playoffs. And now you have to experiment with some form of Gerald Green or Eric Gordon in the starting lineup. First of all, which of those two guys do you think gets the starting nod? Do you put in Green and keep Aaron Gordon in his comfortable six-man spot, or vice versa?
It's going to be Eric Gordon. That's what Mike D'Antoni said at practice today, and it didn't surprise me because when Chris Paul was out earlier this year, they promoted Gordon back then, even though they didn't have – it's a little different. They didn't have Gerald Green back there. But Eric Gordon has kind of been starting half the year anyway because of Chris Paul's on-again, off-again injuries. So even though he's been in – you know, he's known as the reigning sixth man of the year, he's been starting 50% of the time this year anyway. So I think it's something that he's certainly pretty comfortable with already. I don't think they're that worried about what's going to happen there. As far as the past few weeks, the five-game losing streak after the 14-game winning streak, what's interesting for the Rockets is that it's generally been the non-Harden players that have been injured. What's happened recently, they've had extended absences from Chris Paul, from Clint Capella, from Luke Bamute. All of those guys are back now except for Bamute, but just as soon as they come back, of course, now James Harden is out. So it's sort of a delicate balancing act. You lose James Harden, you're losing the leading scorer in the NBA at 32 points a game, also 9 assists. But at the same time, at least the Rockets are deeper than they've been for much of the losing streak, because towards the end of the losing streak, they signed Gerald Green, who's been a positive contributor to the last couple of games. They also got Chris Paul, Clint Capella back. Not that many concerns about their injuries moving forward, because in that double overtime game that you mentioned, Paul was able to play 42 minutes without issue. Capella played 32 minutes. So the good news, the Rockets are deeper than they've been in a while. For the first time, you know, there's 8 or 9 bodies at least that Mike D'Antoni trusts to play rotation minutes. So I guess the way I would describe it, for a while the Rockets have been concerned about quantity over quality. You know, you still have the top-heavy guys with James Harden, but do you have enough depth? Now it's the reverse of that. You know, you have the quantity back now. It's just about whether you have enough high-end talent in the absence of James Harden, and that's where it's going to be an interesting test to see just how dominant Chris Paul still is as the undisputed number one option. You know, I think he'll fare well, but he's going to attract a lot of attention from opposing defenses now, starting with Orlando, and Rockets fans are pretty interested to see how he's going to handle it.
And the Orlando bench units have been having their own struggles with Chris Paul in the starting lineup, not being able to stagger minutes with James Harden. He should be able to take advantage, and the Rockets bench as a whole should still be able to take advantage, because the Magic are suffering their own rash of injuries with Terrence Ross out, sprained MCL, out indefinitely, and most recently Nikola Vucevic broke his wrist. It's still on a timetable of about 6 to 8 weeks before he is reevaluated. However, the Magic have reinserted Evan Fournier and Aaron Gordon, who have given them a jolt offensively in the past 3 games. Their scoring has gone up 10 points per game, including a decisive victory over the Detroit Pistons, who are now 4th in the Eastern Conference, before losing very close games to the Miami Heat and the Brooklyn Nets, both games of which the Magic were leading in the final 3 minutes of the game. Against the Heat, they were up by 8 before squandering that. And then in the final 2 minutes against the Nets, they were up by 3. So the Magic have been playing better, although they have lost 20 of their previous 24 games, or 22 of their previous 26 games, I should say, at this point. That was a couple of games ago. That statistic was still relevant. Let's keep it going with you, sir. And obviously, if you ever need to turn the table, please do so. I want to talk a bit more about this Lakers game, being that it's the most grievous. The 5-game losing streak that you guys were on was eliminated in the double OT thriller, as we just mentioned. But this was against an undermanned Laker unit without its starting backcourt and Lonzo Ball with a sprained shoulder and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who, of course, is in prison, funny enough. He can only play at home games. This team was led by Josh Hart and Tyler Ennis, almost survived despite losing 142-148 and breaking the streak. You guys have lost 5 in a row. You're barely able to manage a victory against this Lakers team. What is happening to this Rockets team in that they're struggling to this level?
There's a couple of different things going on. I would say the success of the Laker backcourt, Josh Hart, Tyler Ennis putting in far too many points on far too efficient shooting. I would say even though Chris Paul, Clint Capella are back, defensively, they were not all the way there. When you miss extended time the way they did, I feel like it's easier a lot of the time for those guys to get back in the flow offensively. Defensively, there are so many switches. There's so much communication. They got better throughout the game. They actually, after giving up 72 in the first half, which was just dreadful, gave up only 21 in the fourth quarter. That's how the Rockets were able to get it to overtime. where they finally won. But when you've had so many rotation players with a lot of time off lately, also integrating Gerald Green, defense is all about communication. They're still trying to get better there. The other factor is the Lakers, you know, let's give them credit. I know they're an 11-24 team. There are a lot of young, talented pieces. You look at guys like Julius Randle, like Brandon Ingram. Both of those had tremendous games against the Rockets. And it's kind of been a theme lately. And if you want a path to success for the Magic, you mentioned those two guys, Evan Fournier and Aaron Gordon. The lengthy athleticism at the forward spots has really given the Rockets problems the past couple of weeks. When you look at the Thunder, who, of course, we all know how long the Thunder are with Robertson, Paul George, Carmelo Anthony, even Russell Westbrook at the point guard spot. The Wizards last week, we all know Otto Porter, Kelly Oubre, and, of course, John Wall and Bradley Beal. When the Rockets have had trouble these past couple of weeks, and their defensive rating before Luke Bamute was out was sixth in the league, the past, I would say, 2.5 weeks since then, it's been in the bottom 20s, all one of the worst in the league. And a big part of it, they have not handled length that well. I would say Bamute and Ariza are two of the only, I would say, truly rangy guys that they can throw out there. And one of those, Bamute, has not played in a while. They've certainly missed his presence. The other part of it is that with the injuries piling up, not just Bamute, but Clint Capella up front, Chris Paul not playing, even though they're both back now, we're talking about, of course, what's happened in the losing streak and the game against the Lakers that was a lot closer than you would think it would be. There's been sort of a trickle-down effect that you need to get more minutes for Ryan Anderson and P.J. Tucker. The problem, because they've been healthy, the problem is though they're healthy, they've generally been dreadful, at least from an offensive standpoint. Both of those guys, in November when the Rockets were 14-1, they shot in the mid to upper 40s from the field. Both of those guys in December are right at about 36%. And Ryan Anderson in particular is a guy, I know Magic fans are familiar with him from a few years back when he was in Orlando. If Ryan Anderson is not hitting his shots, there's not that much value he can provide you because he's not a very good defensive player. So either you're limited in how much you can play him or you're going to give up a lot of points because he's not a good defensive player and he's not offsetting enough with his offense. With P.J. Tucker, he's a better defensive player than Anderson. However, when you're going up against longer teams, when you think about P.J. Tucker as a defender, he's stockier, he's more physical, but he doesn't give you that length, that extra dimension that you have with Ariza and Bamute. So if there's a formula for the Magic, to me, that's where you exploit. Until the Rockets get Bamute back, there's not necessarily enough length up front to guard these long, rangy forwards. Now, maybe if Ryan Anderson starts hitting his shots again, I believe he played well in Orlando last year, if he gets going, if P.J. Tucker can stop fouling, I mean, a big part of it, P.J.'s committed way too many silly fouls lately. If those two guys get going, you can get enough offense to offset the length deficiencies. But what's happened in the absence of Bamute and, of course, the other two guys we mentioned, the Rockets are just not getting enough offensively to overcome the limitations they have defensively without all of their pieces. And so now, other than James Harden, they're back. James Harden has been better defensively, but he's certainly not a dominant defensive player, nor is it fair to expect him to be, given the workload he has to have on offense. But the Rockets defensively should not suffer that much in the absence of James Harden. The question is going to be, of course, how much longer until Bamute comes back? We heard today from Mike D'Antoni, still sounds like another couple of weeks. Definitely not for the Magic game. And then beyond that, obviously, can your bigs hit some shots? And then also, with Paul, Clint Capella, with this being their second game back, with other than Harden, their full cast of players, does the communication get better to where they're closer to the group that for the first 2 months of the season was ranked sixth in the league defensively, as opposed to, you know, the team the past couple of weeks that's been somehow near the bottom of the league?
It's definitely going to be an interesting matchup, especially when you consider Clint Capella versus Bismack Biyombo, who's been playing much better with Vucevic out of the lineup. With Evan Fournier and Aaron Gordon in there, two guys who are proficient scorers, it's just better to pace the team with a big man rim protector who's more focused on doing the dirty work versus Vucevic. The three of those guys were kind of competing over the ball when you've got Elfrid Payton there who's managing every possession. But like him, we were saying, Bismack Biyombo and Clint Capella, you've got Ryan Anderson versus Aaron Gordon, who scored 39 points against the Heat on Saturday night. You've got Trevor Ariza, probably first some version of Jonathan Simmons, maybe a Mario Hezonja or a Wesley Iwundu. Then you've got Aaron Gordon first, Evan Fournier, and of course Chris Paul is going to have a definite advantage over Elfrid Payton, although Elfrid Payton has been playing well. You'd have to expect this to be an offensive explosion. Let me ask you this, Ben. Do you ever look at your lineup, see Chris Paul, Aaron Gordon, Trevor Ariza, Ryan Anderson, and Clint Capella, and can't help but think you're looking at the New Orleans Hornets?
Yeah, especially now that there's no James Harden. I was looking at this today. You know, when James Harden's in the lineup, a guy who's been, you know, second place in the MVP voting two of the past 3 years, won the Players MVP a couple of years ago, was the front runner until the injury, you know, it's hard not to see everything through the prism of James Harden. But yeah, when you look at it all of a sudden now, I mean, of course, Ryan Anderson's had history with both the Magic and the Pelicans. But then beyond that, you see Chris Paul and you see the shooters, you see the 3-and-D pieces. Of course, you see the ex-Pelicans and Anderson and Gordon. You see the athletic rim runner in Capella, who's, by the way, especially important to them because they're just not getting nearly enough from the backup center spot. Nene, who's 35 years old, you hope that he can eventually get going. But first couple of months of the year, he has not been as strong as he was last year. Tarik Black, he did play a key role Sunday. They inserted in the second half, they made an adjustment, Tarik Black over Nene as the backup center because Black gives them more defense. That paid off, but certainly neither one of them is even in the class of Clint Capella, so that's why Clint Capella is very important. But yeah, to get back to the general theme, yeah, that's what it kind of feels like to me, is one of those old New Orleans teams, and that it's, you know, it's built around Chris Paul, and of course we know what their ceiling was in the playoffs, but I guess the upside, if Chris Paul is healthy, and as I said, he played 42 minutes on Sunday, no issues with the groin that kept him out a couple of games last week, if he's healthy, and then you look at his advanced numbers, his player efficiency rating is still 25, he's shooting 40% from three, 46 from the field, there hasn't been any slippage when he's been able to play, so knock on wood, if he's healthy, you can see, yeah, the cast around him. That, yeah, it's kind of reminiscent of those New Orleans teams. And yes, they had a ceiling, but at the same time, they piled up a lot of wins in the regular season. And so that's what you're hoping for from the Rockets over the next few weeks, is just find a way, grind, get as many wins as you can to stay afloat, at least in that number two spot in the Western Conference, until James Harden is able to come back.
Yeah, thanks for having fun with that. I'm of course, referring to the 2010 Hornets, who I think they were the seventh seed against the two seed in Los Angeles Lakers. They were led by Chris Paul, Ryan Anderson, Trevor Reza, Tyson Chandler, or maybe it was Emeka Okafor. I can't remember at that point in time if he had already been traded to Charlotte. Of course, Eric Gordon wasn't acquired until the next year in the Chris Paul trade that brought them out Farouk Aminu after the failed trade with the Houston Rockets. But it's just funny to me, looking at all these names on the sheet, and I'm like, man, That's a lot of former Hornets that I see on this depth chart right now. Before I let you go, I want to get some predictions. Of course, the Rockets are famously first in offense at 115 points per game. They lead the league in three-pointers and free-throw attempts, so they're going to draw a lot of fouls. They're going to take a lot of deep trades. What do you expect to transpire? Probably a lot of pace, a lot of shooting, a lot of points. What's your ultimate prediction for this game against the Magic?
Yeah, I'll take Rockets by 10, and funny thing, Preston, I'm actually more confident about this game after the Harden injury than I was before, and let me tell you why. Before, this is a tricky back-to-back for the Rockets. They've got the Warriors on Thursday, and of course they got a long plane flight from Orlando back to Houston after the game, and before the Harden injury, I think it was very easy to see this as a trap game, because everybody's waiting on that big matchup with the Warriors. Even after the injury, the Rockets are only one game back of the Warriors in the loss column, and they have the tiebreaker as it stands right now. So before the injury, I think I was worried about too much of the focus being on that Warriors game and this Orlando one being a little tricky for that reason. However, after the injury, and because they've had a couple of days to kind of absorb it and get into their heads what the new reality is, I think they get that, you know, these two games against the Warriors they have the next couple of weeks, they could play their absolute best game, and without James Harden, they may not have enough talent, even if they're clicking on all cylinders, to win those games. So the key without James Harden is to grind, to get every possible win that you can get, no matter the opponent. And so actually, in a strange way, I feel like the Rockets' focus tomorrow night in a kind of a game in Orlando, again, front end of a back-to-back. Normally, and they might still rest some players like Nene to be, you know, as available as possible for the Golden State game. But actually, you're going to see the Rockets a little more focused than they would have been if, say, you had had this huge statement Golden State game on the horizon. Whereas now, the expectations for that Golden State game are so low that I don't think that that's nearly going to be as big of a factor in that locker room. I think right now, you know, they're kind of playing that us against the world card, and they're just eager to go out there and show that, you know, even without James Harden, this is still a really talented supporting cast. And as far as the players, yeah, you mentioned playing with pace. Certainly, I think Chris Paul is, you know, the engine for the foreseeable future. The two guys that I'm going to look at, just because I think they're due, Preston, are the two I mentioned earlier, Ryan Anderson, PJ Tucker. two guys that, especially with Chris Paul running the offense, I think you're going to get even more shooting, even more spacing. And those are the two guys. They are better shooters than what they had in December, shooting in the mid-30s. That is unsustainable. At some point, they're going to get going. Ryan Anderson, who Magic fans should be very familiar with, over the course of his career in Houston, there's kind of this joke on Rockets Twitter called hashtag Road Rhino, because his shooting percentages away from home are substantially better than they are at Toyota Center. It just feels like kind of a regression to the mean game in which those two guys finally get going. And so I have nothing to base it on other than law of averages. But those are the two X factors I would look at, just because they have not played that well for the past 2 weeks. And so it just feels like maybe a get right game. And the Rockets as a whole certainly looking to make a statement after losing James Harden and all the questions about what their short-term future is without him.
Yeah, that's definitely a really fair assessment. I would like to give the Magic a chance in this one. They played really well against three defensive juggernauts in the Pistons, the Nets, and the Miami Heat. Of course, the Nets are well below 500, but they are a team that sort of tries hard, a work-hard team, a workhorse, a team that never seems to want to go away. They haven't faced an offensive juggernaut, a top-five-level team since the Pelicans, and even when they did that, they did it with Vucevic without Evan Fournier and Aaron Gordon. So 5 vs. 5, it should be compelling, and I do think the Magic will stay in this one. The depth chart of the Houston Rockets doesn't seem like it's going to completely dismantle them, led by Mahmoud, Nene, P.J. Tucker, Tarik Black, and Gerald Green. But with that being said, even the starting unit on the front line of the Houston Rockets is going to be just too much, with the Magic having nothing beyond their starting five. But I do anticipate a lot of scoring, even with Chris Paul at the helm, somebody who's famous for sort of slowing the ball down. I think with shooters around him like Ryan Anderson, Trevor Reese, and Eric Gordon, something the Magic has struggled with lately, hot shooting guys like Tyler Johnson. It's definitely going to be an entertaining matchup. I definitely encourage everybody to go out to the Amway Center and see some of these stars, Chris Paul, Ryan Anderson, Clint Capella, Trevor Reese, and Eric Gordon. There's going to be a lot of firepower out there for sure, and you could definitely expect 25 points from Evan Fournier and maybe 30 points from Aaron Aflalo again. So that's about going to do it for me. Do you have anything else, Ben DeVos?
Yep. Well, Preston, thank you so much for the time. If any of your listeners want to get in touch with us or get more intel on the Rockets, I strongly encourage you to do it through our new website, LockedOnRockets.com. That's where you can find a lot of my writing, as well as, of course, the daily podcast over at Locked On Rockets. And on Twitter, I'm at Ben DuBose. Preston, before we sign off, tell people, for my listeners, your Twitter handle, your podcast, your websites, just where people can find you if they want to find out more about Preston Ellis, Magic and Pelicans expert.
Well, it feels so nice for you to turn the tables like that. I really appreciate it. Of course, you can follow me at Preston Ellis for my listeners and for yours, at DYBNMagic if you want to follow the new Magic podcast that we've just started. Of course, this is our third episode. If you want to follow my Bird Rights one, which is a bit older, 6 months old, you can follow it at The Bird Rights. And, of course, you'll get all the updates from at Preston Ellis. And we'll have Ben DeVos on in 2 weeks covering the matchup between the Rockets and the Pelicans then, and hopefully James Harden is still on the shelf, because that'll really help those guys. But of course, this is a Magic podcast. Make sure you go over to OPP Magic Blog. That's OrlandoPinstripePost.com. That's our SB Nation affiliate. Thank you so much again, Ben, for having me on. Thank you for the shout out here and the chance to flex my muscle and give our listeners the opportunity. We are a slow and steady growing team, and we need all the support we can get. So thank you to you guys, and thank you to Ben.
Sure thing. Thank you, Preston. Good stuff there from Preston Ellis. If you're curious about his takes on a regular basis, you can follow him on Twitter at Preston Ellis. And with that said, I will wrap up this episode, because I know we've gone long yet again. It feels like we've had a lot of double episodes because, well, it's been a busy week. You would like to think that over the holidays you have a chance to breathe, but unfortunately, the Rockets, between the 5-game losing streak, the injuries to Chris Paul and Clint Capella, and now the more serious injury to James Harden with the grade 2 hamstring strain, there's been a lot to discuss. So apologies for going long, but, well, there's a lot of detail, and it's tough to cover in a short period of time. With that said, we've talked enough Rockets for today, and for now, I'll stop speculating, because we're a day away, and tomorrow we actually get to start seeing the results on the floor, what's going to happen without James Harden. So until then, if you want my thoughts, you can get them at Ben DuBose on Twitter. The show is on Twitter at LockedOnRockets, or you can email us, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better program for you, the diehard Rockets fan. Also, don't forget our new website, LockedOnRockets.com, or our new Facebook page, Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. That's where we're going to have some live Q&As, some exclusive content moving forward. So if you've not liked us on Facebook yet, I strongly encourage and would greatly appreciate you doing so. For now, though, I will leave things right there. Again, thanks to Preston Ellis for joining us. Thanks to you guys for listening. And tomorrow night, it's an early start because it's an East Coast game. Rockets at Orlando, 6 p.m. tip. And after it's over, of course, we will have full reaction right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of your Houston Rockets.